This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We get a chance to do this every week. We look forward to it, as I know you all do, a conversation with the one, the only, Ryan Roland Smith, who joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're good. We were just sort of lamenting the fact that the Tigers seem to have the Mariners' number for whatever reason. I mean, they come into the series, Ryan, they were 11 games under 500. Going into today's game, their bullpen day, they have the worst bullpen in the American League. They're not a good team.
Stop saying that, Bob.
They've got some talented players, but overall, this is not a good team, Ryan, and yet they seem to own the Mariners. Mariners are, what, 1-5 against them now?
Yeah, they seem to crush against them. I don't know what it is, man. They just look really comfortable in the box. I feel like, you know, Justice Sheffield today, I mean, you use him as an example. He just, again, this came down to fastball command and a little theory I have on a young pitcher. And because I've been there before, man, when you start losing some swing and miss, when you're not getting the same strikeout numbers, it hurts your ego. This sounds crazy, and it's so dumb because, like, you know, let's say you go 7 shutout, you only strike out 2 guys. Look, you're happy that you went 7 shutout, ERA drops, and you got the win, whatever. But you're looking at that strikeout total going, man, am I worthy to be here? Does anyone fear me? Like, am I able to throw a ball past anyone? So I think with Justice Sheffield, not saying he's losing all these strikeout numbers, but there is times where he cannot get swings and misses. If he's throwing a ton of, like, a sinking fastball that's just not commanded right, or that slider staying in the strike zone, and he starts to get frustrated. So I think with Justice Sheffield, and these guys look super comfortable. Fastballs, middle of the plate, diving in, and we saw that all series long. There just wasn't many uncomfortable at-bats against the Tigers this series.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I almost wish they were playing Detroit again, because there's a few guys on their team that I can't stand looking at. I'm tired of looking at Eric Haas, and I'm tired of looking at Jake Rogers with his – he looks like a baseball player from the 1890s with that mustache.
Yeah, and it's like I get it, man. Like, you're trying to be cool and, like, hipster or whatever with the mustache, nothing against hipsters or anything like that. But and he's got that silly smile, like, oh, I've got this silly mustache, knowing that it's not cool. Like, knowing that it's cool in a hipster kind of way, it's like, but it doesn't look good on you. Like, if I had that mustache, it'd be funny. Everyone would be like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, like Paxton with the Yankees. But with him, he's just got that weird head, man. Nothing against him. He's not listening. But I was the same way. It was driving me crazy. Even when they were back in Seattle. And then you see him in a home run, go Oppo. I'm like, oh, man, no, not this guy. Because he's just going to embrace that silly, like you said, old school mustache look. It's like, get rid of that thing. I'm done with it.
He's got that weird
man,
head.
I'll tell you what. I struck oil. I struck oil, Ryan Roland Smith. Because I'm telling you, and also last time he was here and he put the pie in the pitcher's face, yeah, the shaving cream, and right. I just don't like the look of that guy. Like Bob pointed out, he's kind of doughy, and I don't know. He thinks he's funny, and yeah, I'm sick of that dude.
And as Ryan said, he's got a weird head.
Yeah. He does. He's trying to embrace that. He's trying to embrace that quirky, like funny teammate kind of dude. But it looks a little forced, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just insecure because I can't pull off facial hair, mustaches, facial hair. I can't do it.
Well, neither can he.
Yeah, that's true. There you go.
Hey,
there you go.
Ryan, what do the Mariners do about getting plunked as often as they do? Listen, I realize that some of them are off-speed pitches. They're not intentional. But when you get plunked 6 times in a 3-game series and Ty France plunked 4 times, and today was not off-speed, that was a fastball right in the back, you're the Mariner pitcher at that point. What do you do? Do you take it upon yourself? Does it come from Scott Service? I mean, they never fire back. They never answer back. I would love for them just to respond once.
Yeah, and obviously you see less and less of that. You know, this everyone's too mature now. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's too grown up to fire back and you know, let their ego get in the way. But now, look, I will be honest with you. There's times, first of all, I talked about this on the post game with Shannon, especially with Ty France. But he's a guy who dives in. They try and pitch him in a lot. He hits the ball inside, out to right field. So he's going to pitch in a lot. But then when you got young pitchers, like some of these Tigers bullpen members, they can't command the fastball, or they can't command a breaking ball, so you're going to get hit. Blauer's made a good point. He said, look, if you,
pitching all you want, but if you can't pitch in with command, don't do it. You know what I mean? That's true.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
On the flip side of that, from a pitcher's point of view or from a teammate's point of view, there's nothing better, and as immature as this sounds, that when a guy gets hit, doesn't matter if it's with a breaking ball or four or five times, when your teammate or you drill someone and the guy who you sort of you got their back with, is for whatever it's worth, baseball struggles to be a team sport. But when you drill someone, you kind of stare them down 60 feet away. Everyone loves that, man. It gets the dugout going. The other team might fire back a little bit. You have a little bit of that camaraderie. It just changes the vibe in the dugout. It's important. And there's no, you can't really put, any kind of like proof behind that. I'm just telling you, man, like it's the coolest thing. When Felix, I remember, would drill someone. One of his guys would get drilled, one of his buddies. He'd drill someone back. And all of a sudden, that dugout just gets going. And you feel like you're part of like a team. That's the best thing ever. I think it's important, man. I mean, why not just drill someone back, get some reaction in your dugout, get fired up, and all of a sudden a little bit of rah-rah. Why not? That's good. It's immature as that sounds, but hey, it does help the vibe. I'm not going to lie.
Well, and again, is that a directive from the manager, or is that something you as the pitcher take upon yourself? Because I would love it to come from somebody out there just to say, yeah, maybe it's not intentional, but six times in a three-game series and four on one guy is way too much. There's got to be a response. Who sends the message?
A lot of times your manager does. A lot of times your manager stands up. It depends. It depends on the manager's style too. I'll give you a couple examples. Like first, I don't know what Scott Service style is like, where he has that kind of like that rah rah about him. Put it this way, man. Kirk Gibson, I had him with the D-backs. That's all he wanted to do. I swear to God, it got to the point where I was like, hey man, we can't just keep drilling guys. Like this is nuts. He was just like, hey, you drill that, I can't use the words he used to use in the dugout. And I was like, man, all right, because that was his style, and people respected that, and it wasn't forced. On the flip side, John McLaren, who, great guy, and I like the dude. He was the bench coach forever, then he took over as a manager. He tried to do that. I'll give you a perfect example. 2007, we're playing against the Angels, and Vladimir Guerrero, senior, not the kid, the dad, is just crushing. Like, he's killing us. And then we've got this guy, Jorge Campillo, the nicest dude, like just the silent assassin, nicest dude on the planet. He's like, hey, Campillo, I need you to drill him. I'm like, okay, you've got a Hall of Famer who everyone loves, Vladimir Guerrero. He's just hitting bomb after bomb. You're going to have Jorge Campillo throwing 86, hit him in the back, like really? So Campillo tries to hit him twice. The whole crowd goes nuts. And then, Vladimir is looking back at him. And then he throws a pitch, he hits it for a bomb, and it's just like we're rolling our eyes in the bullpen saying, what are we doing here? It was too forced. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So depending on your manager, depending on their style, whatever they can do to get their team to, back each other up in whatever capacity, and if that means drilling someone and that's your style, hey, have at it,
Hey, Ryan, we've already talked about the fact that they're 1-5 against Detroit, and in order to do it, first of all, your reaction to Fraley's catch, but is there anything to, like one team having another team's number, or did you ever have like, individual matchups with guys that you, really struggled with, or you felt like he had your number or anything? Is there anything to that as far as like a team? I know individually that goes on, but as far as a team goes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, individually, Kurt Suzuki, he's now playing with, who's he with now? I just saw him. The Angels.
Angels,
he's been
around
forever. Dude, I swear to God, man, he was like laughing at every pitch I threw. I'm like, dude, I can't get this guy out. Like, I don't know what it is. It didn't matter what I threw. It's just like he was like looking back at me like, really, that's it? But then there was other dudes. I'm not just saying this, man. Frank Thomas, it was kind of a letdown. Like, here he is, the big hurt, grew up idolizing the dude. And I threw like these just fastballs, middle in, and he was jumping out of the way, and I owned him. I'm like, well, I don't get it. What's he doing? Like, you're the big hurt. So there's those individual things, but there's also the team aspect as well. I remember you go to a certain player. I remember the White Sox for us. For whatever reason, man, we'd go to that place. It just seemed louder. It seemed like they were just crushing. It seemed like they were completely in control the whole time. I remember we had a lead, like a 4 or 5 run lead, and you just knew that we were going to lose it. I remember the White Sox for a couple of years there, we just literally could not beat that team. So that's definitely true. And look, I know the Tigers are not good. I know that, bad with their offense is bad and their bullpen is young and bad and had a bullpen day, whatever. But man, give it to them, man. They got in some good counts and they hit the ball really well. And your boy Rogers with that silly mustache had a couple of good swings today. So these are big leaguers, man. They get in a good count, they're gonna hit. That's for sure.
That silly mustache and his weird head. That's yeah, makes him tough to take.
Doughy body. Like Bob said, he looked like one of those old boxers that put their dukes up, you know?
Back in the John L. Sullivan days.
Yeah,
exactly. Like you see on the back of like the oil, like the mustache oil, like the 100%.
Yes. For sure. Yeah. Hey, Ryan, as far as the game that was good, the middle game where they won and it was highlighted by Fraley in that catch and more importantly, the throw. And I had been critical of his arm because I had seen two or three throws where he looked like he was putting everything into it and it wasn't traveling very far at all. And I'm like, man, this guy doesn't have much of an arm. I don't know if it was adrenaline or what happened last night, but he was one step off of the warning track and just fired a laser into Shed Long, who was a couple of steps past second base towards first base on a line. And I mean, just a brilliant play all the way around, timing the jump, bringing it back in. That would have ended the game. They would have been swept by the Tigers, if not for that play. What a brilliant play that was.
It was awesome. And then also, too, sometimes you catch that ball and you kind of stand there like in shock and you forget that you have an opportunity to get that second out. And the fact that he just picked up, didn't show the ball to the umpire, just picked up, went boom, straight away. Like the natural instincts, like, hey, I got it, look at this. Grabbed the ball out of the glove. He just one, two step, boom, crawl up, straight to Shed, like you said, and showed off that arm. Maybe a little bit of a little adrenaline jolt there but I don't know what the grading is on his arm, but he is super athletic, and when he's healthy and when he's loose and when he's not looking over his shoulder to see who's going to take his playing time away, Jake Fraley can be really good. And I think he's in that opportunity right now. The fact that he knows he's got a bit of space, he knows there's not someone breathing down his neck in AAA or someone coming back from the IL or whatever it may be, so he's got a bit of room to breathe a little bit and be loose and play the game.
Yeah, that was, I thought, can we play Aaron Goldsmith's? I don't know.
Did you hear this yet? Did you hear this call yet?
Oh, yeah. It was gold, yeah.
Yeah, here we go. For those that haven't heard it, here is Aaron Goldsmith on the Fraley catch, and this is gold. This will be played for years and years to come with the voice crack.
Paredes clubs this to left field. Fraley leaps in. Are you serious? Shed gets two. Wow. Unreal.
That is the best. Hey, I got a question, though. Was Mike Blauer saying wow to Aaron's voice, or was he saying wow to the play?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, the answer is yes.
That's a very good question. Yeah.
So good.
He needs a cup of tea after that.
Yeah. Well, I love it, man. I thought it added to the whole thing. I know Rabel has that one where it's the, you know, Golden Tate where he's like,
oh yeah,
it looks like he has it, and he does. Yeah, he does. Yeah.
So good.
So you gotta love that stuff.
Yeah, if you get a chance, listen to the Tigers broadcast.
Oh yeah,
The guy's like, I don't know if you heard that, but he's like, oh no, like he's like a kid who just like, you know, dropped his milk or something. You know, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, gold.
Hey, Ryan, I don't know if we've talked to a lot of different people over the last few weeks about all of this. What's it called? Somebody called it spider glue.
Spider tack.
You know, this whole thing. We saw Garrett Cole with the, you know, you want to talk about a bad approach at the plate. That press conference that he had, like, what a bad, he wasn't ready for anything there. The questions,
was brutal.
It was so bad to watch, and I kind of fault his whoever the media director is there for not, you know, getting him ready of something to say because he didn't really have an answer. But, you know, just what do you make of what's going on with this whole thing? It seems like it's just caught fire in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, first of all, 100%, the PR guy probably told him, look, no one's going to ask you about any of this stuff, so just feel free to do your thing. And he wasn't prepped, which is, you know, come on. Like, you're kidding, right? I mean, and especially you roll into another team and you got their media who has access to you, and they're not worried that how you're going to react or shun them the rest of the season.
Yeah, right.
Especially in New York, too. But anyway, this whole spider tech thing, first of all, you can go on Amazon, you can see some bozo standing there holding a cinder block with his hand. That's how sticky it is. So put it this way. There's a group on Facebook with a bunch of ex-players, and the conversation went around the other day, like, hey, have you heard, and mind you, these are guys who played 5, 10 years ago. So, hey, have you heard of this spine attack? And all of a sudden, all this, we're just diving into it saying, look at this, man. I'm sitting there going, man, where was this when I pitched? But I guess it's someone caught wind that these guys were using. You can get it on Amazon, by the way.
I see the bozo holding the cinder block, by the way, right now. I looked it up.
that's me in 5 years, if you want to go have a look at it, if you're listening. when I'm selling spider tactic pitches. No, but I obviously someone's caught wind, someone's mentioned it, and boom, some guys come out now, boom, it's exploded. Now everyone knows what spider attack is, and now that's the new thing that they're going to be investigating. And I guarantee you there's four or five other things that's been used or gets used or whatever that makes their hand super sticky. I don't know how they pitch with this stuff, man. It's super distracting. But at the same time, you know what? Hey, it's working. If he's using it, it's working, whoever's using it, for sure.
Hey, we played this soundbite from Pete Alonso. I don't know if you've heard this, but he said it without hesitation, without any sense of debate. Like he said, it's a fact that Major League Baseball is doctoring the balls depending on what the free agent class is. So he was talking about when there was a big group of free agent pitchers who were going to be up for big contracts that they juiced the balls so that their numbers would go up, their ERA would be inflated, and they wouldn't be able to command the money they otherwise would. And now he's saying because you've got all these shortstops like, you know, Correa and Seager and Baez and everybody that are going to get these big contracts coming up, that they've messed with the balls to dampen the offense so their numbers will be down and they won't get the money that they otherwise would. That seems awfully like a massive conspiracy theory to me. I have not heard anybody else say it, and he opened with, it's a fact. Have you heard that?
I know. Well, so I have seen that, and you know, Alonso, he likes to have that dry sense of humor. It's like, is he serious or is he messing with everyone?
He sounded serious. I didn't see his face.
Yeah,
though.
I know. Yeah, and look, that's some straight tinfoil hat conspiracy stuff going on there. Because that's clever, man. If you can somehow, first of all, let's not forget Major League, and I'm not going conspiracy theory here at all, but Major League Baseball owns Rawlings. They manufacture the balls now. They bought them out a couple of years back, and all of a sudden some crazy stuff started happening with the balls. I do not deny, no chance those balls are the same as what they were 5 years ago. 100%. The way they're made are completely different. Like, for example, not Rawlings, but there was a manufacturing ball company that supplied the baseballs to the Australian Baseball League, and these things were like golf balls. I mean, guys were crushing balls down in Australia, and everyone's like, what is this? But on the major league level, when you actually own the ball company, and then you're like, oh, we're going to investigate it, well, you're basically investigating yourselves. So yeah. I do agree when it comes to that the balls have changed, whether or not Rob Manfred said, hey, look, we need more offense, make these things like golf balls. As far as switching them up every year, man, I guess they can. I don't know if he's dead serious or if that's a, like you said, a fact. I haven't, you know, gone into my YouTube flat earthers research just yet to find that out yet. But again, when you think about it, they own the balls and they have changed. Last couple of years, it's been completely different game. The ball's been jumping off the bat like never before.
But the idea that they do it based on the amount of high level free agents that are going to be coming up, like, oh, too many pitchers going to be in line for a big contract, so we got to juice the ball or go the opposite way. I'm sorry, I can't. I'm going to need obvious proof of that.
I'm going to agree with you there. I mean, you think of the effort level and the research and the time and the money that would go into that. It's like, dude, just you may as well pay these guys if they're going to hit. I mean, you're really going to – it seems crazy to me to think that. But you know what? Who knows? Who knows, man? I mean, maybe they've got some computer that can completely change a baseball within 2 seconds. So I don't know. I don't know.
It is kind of fishy that they own the baseball company. But, you know, I'm starting to worry about the aforementioned bozo with the cinder block to his hand because I'm like, how does he get that? That stuff looks so sticky. Like, how is he going to get that cinder block off? And then, you know,
He's not, man. Look, he sold out. He's got that thing stuck to his hand. He's probably took him 2 weeks to pry that thing off. He's making a ton of cash.
He's sleeping with it.
Yeah.
He's just made $2 million or whatever. He's a millionaire now because his spider attacks him. Everyone's going to that thing going, man, this stuff's sticky. I'm buying it. Now all these pitchers have jumped on board, man. He doesn't care if he's got a cinder block stuck to his hand.
Well, it just seems like it looks incredibly sticky. I'm just like, how do you manage that? How does that not show up on the baseball? How does it not,
right.
You know,
how does the baseball not stick to your finger?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're going to see next. A guy try to throw a ball and then it never comes out of his hand.
Yeah, exactly. I assume that if it's stickier, it's going to be more friction, means it's going to be slower. You can't throw it as hard, but I guess not. But I do know this, that like there was, you know, guys who would put, you know, the pine tar or whatever in their glove and then pick up the ball. And you wouldn't see a whole lot on the baseball. And let's not forget, the ball's already rubbed up. It's brown. Mm-hmm. So it already looks like it's got something on it. But on their inside their glove was just an absolute mess. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. And again, I've been out of the game for too long now, and I need to get back on the field and check out some of these gloves. Obviously not now, but... Because, yeah, I'm with you. How does that not show up on the baseball?
Ryan, always fun, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds great, guys. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Ryan.
There you go. Ryan Roland-Smith with us every week talking baseball. Good stuff from him. We're going to come back. We're going to get a first-hand account, first-hand update from Seahawks OTAs. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Quick, turn your mic on, Bob.
An appearance by Frank here. There was a request on the text line to see Frank. He's in studio with us today because I've got to... he's just sitting there looking around like, what in the heck is going on here?
The look on his face is, Master, what are you doing to me?
He's like, let me down. He wanted to bark at somebody who was walking by. Now he's getting anxious. Frank, all right, there we go. So hopefully it made its way to the...
I told you, it's a good thing my wife's not here. She'd try to steal your dog.
Would she? Yeah, you sent her a video of him. He doesn't know what to make of everything here. He's just kind of checking everybody out and laying down by my chair. So
he's been a very, very good special guest today. In the studio.
Yeah.
Very good boy.
He's been good. Sit down, Frank. Good boy. Okay. So now that we got that out of the way, request granted. We take all requests there on the text line. 710-710 is the text line. Now, we need a first-hand update. You were out there at Seahawks OTAs. You were taking a look at what was going on with the young guys, the old guys. What was the takeaway for you?
Yeah, well, just a few little glimpses of different things, you know, that you see. I mean, it was kind of interesting, like... they were doing a scout team run through for the defense, and the guy who was part of running it was Andy Dickerson, who you can't miss him. Andy Dickerson, he's got I think he let his hair grow out during COVID, and he's got a big bushy red red hair. So
kind of a carrot top effect.
Yeah, you'll see him. But I mean, he was out there, you know, holding up cards and running what looked like a scout team offense for the defense to practice against. So, and that was just kind of noteworthy because, you know, I've talked about a lot of this is just learning how to practice. So for some of the younger guys or the new guys that are coming here, you know, and for it's old hat for guys like, Bobby Bobby, you know, Metcalf, guys that have been here. But for some of the younger guys, other little glimpses I got, Jordan Brooks worked on his legs in the offseason.
So he just looked bigger?
He just looks big and strong and powerful in the way he moves around. I think he's going to be one of those guys that you see that just takes that huge jump the second year, where it's like, you know, he started off very slowly last year, and I remember in the beginning of the year, but he was like, yeah, you know, he's out there, but he's not really making plays, and he wasn't. But he started about week five to make plays, I think, at Arizona.
Was he getting much time before that? Game.
No, not a lot. Not a lot. So, yeah, that's also part of it. But, you know, I want to say he's played like 40% at most of the snaps last year. Even after at the end of the year, and there were games where he played, you know, 85, 90%. But, you know, he was very efficient by the end of the year. I remember there was a game where he had more tackles than Bobby and less snaps. So he was just flying around. But he looks great. You know, I didn't see Bobby do a whole lot, but Russ was throwing the ball quite a bit and a lot of tight end work. And, you know, saw them in some of the plays that they were running. where it looked like, you know, first of all, Tyler Mabry, guy I've been talking about for a couple years now, well, since the draft last year, because he was a free agent, undrafted free agent, who I really liked looking at him on film. And then, you know, you saw Will Dissly catching the ball. But also Colby Parkinson looks good. And I think, you know, I was talking to Jake about him, and he said that, you know, he's been really having a good offseason working with Russell and stuff, because Jake Heaps was out there. Talked to the professor out there. But then also Gerald Everett just looks different. You know, he's just very smooth. And, you know, he's a really athletic, I would say a really athletic version of Greg Olsen. Because that's what I saw from Greg Olsen last year, is that they just know how to move around the field.
Right.
You know, and it's just an economy of whether it's steps or just motion, that they just do it very simply. And Gerald Everett looked really good. So, you know, that's over on the defensive side. And again, it was mostly just drills that we're watching. It's not like they were coming together and having this big epic team, you know, session, because it's, you know, nobody's in pads. It's all jerseys and helmets. But watching Alton Robinson, he has a way of getting his shoulder down and dipping and getting around a corner. When they're doing the drills, you see some guys, you know, like Rasheem Green, who, again, third rounder. I think he's a great player. Not great, but he's a really good player that you have on your
roster.
Good
guy to have on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. He's a, like, I think I've heard you say this before. He's a nice player.
Yeah.
He's a nice player. He's not going to maybe be a hero. And you kind of watch how he moves. He's kind of a little bit more mechanical. I wish he would kind of turn it loose and become, you know, a little bit more fluid and just, you know, get some more aggression in his play. But, you know, he is who he is. But watching Alton Robinson, I think he's going to be a guy that surprises a lot of people.
Was Daryl Taylor out there?
Yeah, he was out there. Didn't see a whole lot from him. They were working him on some pass rush drills. So, and I'd have to say, watching him versus Alton Robinson, like, Alton Robinson's ahead of him.
So they had him on pass. They didn't have him playing linebacker
today, anyway. But I didn't see any defenses because, like I said, Bobby wasn't out there. They were running some 7-on-7 and stuff like that. But yeah, that's where I saw him, was rushing. That doesn't mean he didn't take some reps, because sometimes I was looking at different players. But,
right, right. What about cornerbacks? Anything?
Yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of, like, Witherspoon, but I did see Marquise Blair, and I think that's important, because
we forget about him.
That was such a shame last year. He had next to, you know, I would say, and this goes for the entire camp, next to Jamal Adams, who was just ridiculous and stood out. You know, we've talked about how if you didn't know who he was, you would have been asking after practices last year, who was 33?
Mm-hmm.
Because he makes every play. But Marquise Blair, I would say, was a not, I don't want to say a close second, because Jamal Adams is just special. But Marquise Blair had probably the second best camp, I thought. And so he looked good, like he's moving around. He looks fast. He looks like he got his speed back. A lot of times guys come off of injuries, and they'll increase their speed. I know I did in college. You know, I dropped a little bit of weight, but I worked so hard on my knee that, you know, I was running a lot better. So hopefully that's the case with him. But I think it's important for him, because they need a good nickel corner. And he can also play safety.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they need safeties right now. So, but it was good to see him out there as well.
Yeah, and then as far as receivers, anybody stand out to you?
Yeah, I was watching Eskridge out there catch, but I mean, they threw a lot to the tight ends, which we've talked about, and we hope that's the case. But saw DK running routes, looks fantastic. You know, saw Eskridge, but didn't see him as much as I, you know, rookie minicamp, he really stood out, his speed, everything. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be different for these guys. When, you know, it's one thing when you're at the rookie minicamp, and especially, like I said, the two draft choices, I didn't really see Stone Forsythe that much. And it's hard with offensive linemen to really see much. But,
well, yeah, no pads, there's no contact.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, in the run game, you just can't really figure it out. But you do see the speed and how it stands out. And I thought Trey Brown and Eskridge both stood out, because they are the top two picks. But then when you bring the vets in, all of a sudden they don't really stand out that much.
Yeah.
You know, it takes them a while to get going. But yeah, I mean, as far as receivers go, Tyler Lockett was not there. And I don't think he might have been. He might have been on the sidelines, but, you know, just mostly noticed DK and a lot of the tight ends.
All right, good stuff. And then next week is the mandatory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It'll probably be about midday, so I'm going to try to get out there for, you know, at least a couple of those.
Try to get some firsthand reports again next week for everybody out there that obviously doesn't have the access that Dave Wyman does, so we'll bring that to you. Meanwhile, we touched on this earlier for those of you that hadn't joined us yet, but we talked about the Mariners. It looks like they could have a crowded outfield, some players we haven't talked about. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
What number would you be, Bob?
24.
I like 24, too. You can't have it. I'm sorry. Not on our team.
Dave and I were just quizzing each other. I'm not a numbers guy. Like, I remember everybody's number. I mean, certainly I know Russell's number 13. I'm just
very
kidding.
Funny.
I'm just
I know.
Trying to get the textures going.
like the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor.
Exactly right. But there's a few. You know Russell's 3, and you know DK's 14. You know Bobby's 54. But when we were just kind of quizzing each other during the break, and you were nailing almost all of them. Like the defensive line outside of Dunlap, who had such an odd number last year.
Yeah.
And what
43.
But what did he change it to, you said?
8.
Number 8 this year.
Yeah. Well, the one I couldn't get that I thought was weird that didn't stand out, Quandre Diggs.
Yeah, I couldn't remember that one until you said it.
And I looked it up as 30, and it, when I saw it was 37, it's not like I went, oh, of course. I was like, oh, really?
Yeah, and he's, what did you say, 6 now?
6 now.
He's number 6.
We'll remember that one.
Yeah, and I know a lot of our listeners, they love that stuff. They could probably rifle off every single one of them, you know. But they don't stick with me, generally.
Brandon Schell, 72.
No idea.
I remember that because that was Big Ray Roberts' number.
Yeah, and I kind of was guessing on Dwayne Brown. I was said it with no certainty
you
whatsoever.
Got that one. 76.
More of a question. But you had Posick. It's just, I don't know, especially the interior guys. Like Puna Ford, I didn't what did you say it was again?
97.
97.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The reason that came up is I was asking Dave, did it confuse you at all seeing guys with new numbers out there? Because there were a number of guys who switched numbers.
Yeah, and Akilo Witherspoon, which I can't remember what number he was in San Francisco. I want to say 24, but he's number 2. So the guys that, you know, went to these cool single-digit numbers, Quandre Diggs, Carlos Dunlap, and Akilo Witherspoon.
Mm.
And Dwayne Eskridge, I mean, I don't know, he's new, obviously, but he's number 1. So that's kind of cool. But you see, what was it? Julio Jones, I think, is number 2.
He was number 11. That was pretty cool of him to say, no, that's okay, because A.J. Brown was going to give him his number.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, that's all right.
Or as El Hombre calls him, the pause button.
The pause button, that's exactly
right. Because the 211s looked like the pause on his remote. Yeah, so, yeah, it was interesting being out there and watching the guys run around. But, yeah, some guys stood out. The one we didn't talk about real quick before we get back to what we're talking about is Kerry Hyder. And he's number 51, which is a little bit odd. That was Bruce's number, but you know he was an outside rusher. But you asked me how he looked, and I was like, well, I didn't really. And then I was like, oh no, wait, that guy looks like he would be unathletic, and he's really athletic. Like if you look at his body, you would not expect him to move as fast as he moves. That's what I would say. And when you watch him play, it's the same way. I mean, he's a bigger guy. And he's certainly not out of shape. I mean, he's a well-proportioned guy and everything. It just he just looks 6'2", 275, 280, and he's a guy that really moves well. I mean, I think he can play inside and outside, kind of like Michael Bennett type.
Yeah, so, looking forward to seeing him out there. I was asking about Daryl Taylor and all those guys. So we'll see. There's a lot of possibilities in the way of the pass rush. I don't know in terms of just established talent, what they're, you know, they're going to give you this. We know what Hyder did last year for the 49ers, but what does he look like in this system?
It's kind of like corner.
Yeah, yeah. Just a few questions, but doesn't mean they don't have the guys. We just haven't really seen it here yet. Right. So it'll be interesting. But one thing we touched on early in the show is the outfield situation that we've talked about before as it relates to Mitch Haniger. What is his role going to be if all these guys really pop the way they're predicted to? When we're talking about Kelnick, talking about Julio Rodriguez and Kyle Lewis and Taylor Trammell, that was the conversation. Those guys and him. We never mentioned Jake Fraley. Never mentioned him really because, A, he's been hurt. I mean, he hardly played at the beginning of the season, and then he was out for an extended period of time with that hamstring injury. He has since returned and made his presence known with a couple of timely hits. He had, what, he drove in seven. He had a grand slam and a three-run home run. He came up with a big hit in extra innings, and more importantly, he came up with the catch. He came up with the play of the game in the second of the three Detroit games, which secured a win. And as a texter pointed out, it took a superhuman effort, you know, superhuman catch and throw to salvage a game against the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah,
who come into the game today with the worst bullpen in the American League. One of the worst records. I mean, starting the series, I think there were 11 games under 500. Not a good team.
No.
And they had to pull out a miracle to get that win. But Fraley, I think the jury's out. I don't know how he fits. I don't know how he looks over an extended period of time because we just haven't seen it. But I think he's certainly worth being in that conversation. You kind of forgot about him. He's just sort of out of sight, out of mind, sort of like Evan White. Now we're talking Evan White because he's starting his rehab in Tacoma, but his name didn't come up for couple weeks. I mean, you just kind of forget about so many injuries. What is it, 51 players they've had now? They signed Jake Bowers.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's number 51
they
to play
40,
for this team so far.
I think Shed Long made it 49.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, the turnover, the injuries, everything that's happened. But Jake Fraley, I don't know if he becomes a guy you consider as a piece for the future or good enough to become an attractive trade piece, but he's certainly worth mentioning.
He sure is fun to watch. And, you know, like you said, he's 26 years old, so it's not like he's out of that range. I mean, we talked about Dylan Thomas and what a great story he is, but he's 30, right? I think after 29, 30. So, and that doesn't mean he's out either. It's just that it's not very likely just because you think, you know, this is a kind of a youth movement here that we have going on. I'm trying to get for sure. Is he for sure 20? Yeah, he's 26 years old. But Fraley, right now, the interesting thing about him, though, was the walks.
Dylan Thomas is 28.
He's 28.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's probably still in range.
But on this team, that's bordering on old.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And as far as, you know, what we're all looking at is, are you part of the future, you know, going forward? But, you know, Fraley, I mean, he's something else. You're right about the throw last night. And also, and Ryan Roland Smith pointed this out, too, to have the presence. You know, I was going to ask Blowers about this. We didn't have enough time, but what was their center fielder who crashed into the wall? Is it Derek Hill?
Oh, and hurt his shoulder.
Yeah, hurt his shoulder.
Another great – yeah, there's some great plays made in the outfield.
Yeah. He got a double on a bobbled ball to Donovan Walton, and it was – I think it was in the first game or second game, but he rounds first base. And, you know, a lot of times guys will do that as just kind of a going through the motions. But he was, I know he's fast, but he was totally aware and watching every last little detail. Like, I just think it's so hard to be a pro in Major League Baseball on every situation. So, you know, in his case, it was like he was so ready to take off running. If that ball got bobbled or anything like that, he was going to take second base. And when that was a standard routine single.
Right.
But because he was so focused and ready, and he's got great speed, he gets to second. And, you know, I feel like Blowers, we've talked about this before, where, you know, there's sometimes where, you know, you think you're going to get thrown out at first base, and then the guy bobbles it, and you're like, oh, if I'd have ran hard the whole time.
Yeah.
Same thing for me in the NFL. You know, you run, and you choke it down, and all of a sudden the ball pops out. I'm like, oh, I could have had that if I'd have run. I mean, that's called being a pro. You know, and so for Fraley in that situation – to being a young guy, not having played in a whole bunch of games. I mean, he's played in 33 games. To, you know, make the catch that he made and then have the awareness to make that throw, that was probably what impressed me the most, is that, you know, that he did that. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about him. You know, the arm thing kind of got cleared up.
He certainly had a cannon on that play.
Sure looked
like
it. And
somebody was texting in earlier saying, oh, you haven't been paying attention, Bob. I've watched every moment of this season. I have been paying attention. I've seen some really poor throws from him just in terms of velocity and getting it there, not even accuracy. And that was different. That was hopefully that's who he is. Maybe it was the adrenaline of the moment. I don't know. But it shows that he's got the ability to really put something on a throw. And he That was a brilliant throw on a line, on target, to Shed Long, which made it a very easy double play. I mean, it wasn't a close play at first by any stretch.
But, you know, so, yeah, it kind of cleared. Well, we don't know for sure. And that's something, you know, I was going to ask Blowers about, just to sort of rank the throwing arms in the outfield for the Mariners. But just having that awareness, making that play. Last week or last weekend, he hit his first grand slam. Mm-hmm. He gets on base like crazy. He's got 16 walks. 12 strikeouts, but still, you know, he's batting 257 now, but he got his on-base percentage is at 500. So, I mean, there's just a lot to like about him. Maybe he's one of these guys that surprises us. He sure is fun to watch, and it seems like every time you see him, he's got, like, dirt on his, you know, pocket. If something's ripped open, he had, like,
blue-collar player.
Yeah, exactly. You got to love a guy like this.
All right, we're going to come back, talk some more football with the professor, John Clayton. He'll join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.